Samavetta Bhakta Vedigi Jai, Gopram Nandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Vishnu Banaya Krishna Prasad Buddha Shrimati Bhakta Vedanta Swami Nityanabhine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachadane. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatade Shatarane. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Our reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 48, Verse 20. Ita hi bhuteshu characharesu. Mayada yoyonishu bhatinana. Evam bhavan kevala atmayonishu. Atma atma tantro bahuda vibhati. Yata, as he, indeed, Bhuteshu, among manifested beings, Chara, mobile, Achareshu, immobile, Mahi Adaya, earth and so on, Yonishu, in species, Bhanti, manifest, Nana, variously, Evam, so, Bhavan, you, Kevala, one alone, Atma, yourself, Yonishu, in those whose source, Atma, supreme soul, Atma Tantra, self-reliant, Bahuda, manifold, Vibhati, appear. Translation, just as the primary elements, earth and so on, manifest themselves in abundant variety among all the species of mobile and immobile life, so you, the one independent supreme soul, appear to be manifold among the variegated objects of your creation. You create, destroy, and also maintain this universe with your personal energies, the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Yet you are never entangled by these modes or the activities they generate. Since you are the original source of all knowledge, what could ever cause you to be bound by illusion? Purport, the phrase Ganatmanas Te Kvacha Bandhahetu, since you are constituted of knowledge, what could be a cause of bondage for you? Definitely indicates the obvious that the omniscient Supreme God is never in illusion. Therefore, the impersonalistic theory that we are all God but have forgotten and are now in illusion is refuted here in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. What's that? So this continues Akura's praise of Krishna. And as I explained the other day, generally this it's not unusual that the praise of the people of Dwarka or Mathura, the Yadus and others, will contain a lot of descriptions of Krishna as Supreme Lord. So they praise him for his position as the Supreme Lord. So, of course, the word Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Ishvara, they have certain connotations, but it's not always clear because the words are used in different contexts. Sometimes we call a Jiva Bhagavan or whatever, God, Ishvara, etc. We have Ishvara, Maheshvara, Ishvareshvara, etc. So the terms get a little confusing. So when we want to talk about Supreme Lord, then it's better to also explain what those terms mean. So what does it mean when Krishna is actually the Supreme Lord? So therefore, there's a whole description of how, as the Supreme Lord, he is different from other living entities. So the previous verse talked about how he creates, maintains the material world, and he's different and non-different from it. So this verse continues in the same way, saying that just as the elements manifest themselves in all the moving and non-moving living entities, that means animals and plants, because all the bodies of the living entities are made out of elements. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord spreads himself throughout the creation, and somehow he's present there within everything. But at the same time, though he is everywhere and spread out everywhere, he is also separate. So that's what the next verse, 21, describes, that he actually is never entangled by the modes of nature or
any of the actions of the jivas, even though he is the creator of them and he pervades everything. So under normal circumstances in material world, we don't see how that is possible. There has to be connections between the creator and the created object. And yet here they're saying, no, actually he's completely separate and not entangled by it. There's often the example given of the potter and the pot. So a potter gets some clay and he has a wheel and he makes a pot. So what is the relationship between the potter and the pot? By looking at the pot, we can infer about the potter. If it's made crooked, we say, okay, the potter was not a very good potter. And if it's done very nicely and smoothly and symmetrically, then we say, oh, he was a good potter. So by looking at the creation of the material world, then we can infer about Supreme Lord. But then the problem comes is, oh, there's faults in the material world, there's suffering, etc. So therefore, must be fault in the Supreme Lord. So that's a common inference. If we see an imperfect material world, we have to blame God for that. Just as if we have an imperfect pot, we blame the potter. He made the pot, then it's got a crack in it, so he's responsible for it. So then once that happens, then we say, well, how can it be God if he has faults? If we have suffering in the material world and God did it, how can it be God? He can't be an all-perfect God if he makes such suffering in the material world. So therefore, the relationship between the creator and the material world is an important one. We have to explain it somehow. Now, if we say, oh, well, okay, the Lord didn't create the material world, then he's not the Supreme Lord anymore. Who created the material world? It went on by itself. Then what does the Lord do? Nothing. Well, then again, he's non-functional and he has no power. So when we talk about a Supreme Lord, then automatically we must somehow attribute him as being the creator of everything. Everything else is under his control. But then the problem comes. Then we get faults in the material world, so then we blame God for it. It becomes too related to the object of his creation. So this is a problem, a logical problem. And a lot of people ask this question. And because of they don't get a satisfactory answer, they often reject the idea of God. So this is, and it's not only in Indian philosophy, it's a world Christian philosophy also has the same problem they have to deal with. So it's a problem as long as we accept the Supreme Lord, then we got to explain everything here in the material world in terms of God, which is difficult to do because how do we explain suffering, etc. Of course, we don't blame God, then we have to separate it from. So then we have to explain why there is suffering in the material world if God didn't create it. In the Vedic literature, in the Bhagavatam here, we see that it's quite clear that the Lord is completely separate from He creates it, definitely, so that He's God. At the same time, He is also separate from it, not entangled by it at all, not related to it at all. Simultaneous, sees everywhere but not involved in it at all. So that has to be further explained because it also looks contradictory. You say that he is in everything in the material world and he's non-different from everything in the material world, and yet we say no, he's separate, then problematic. So everything has to be explained very nicely. So in verse 21, it explains how the Lord actually, though he is the creator of everything, pervades everything, he is not affected by anything in the material world. And therefore, we cannot blame him for what happens in the material world. Now, of course, not explained here, but the explanation we give is that what happens in the material world is because of another factor, the jivas. The Lord has his other shakti, the tatastha shakti, which manifests the jivas, who are also non-different from the Lord and different simultaneously. So the Lord pervades material energy because it's made out of His Bahiranga Shakti, all the matter, five material elements, mind, senses, etc., plus jivas, who are the Tatastha Shakti. And they're both non-different from Supreme Lord, and simultaneously different. So when we talk about the Lord being non-different from His creation, yes, in one sense, matter is His Shakti and jivas are His Shakti, so therefore non-different. At the same time, we have to accept difference. Matter is inert, it's not conscious, quite different from the Supreme Lord, dependent on Him, can't operate by itself. Jivas, similar to the Lord because they have consciousness, but not one, but many, many, many jivas. They are anu, small particles, subject to ignorance, unlike the Lord. So they're also different. But it's the combination of these two, matter and the jivas, that gives certain results in the material world that we may not like. So the activities of the material world, the karmas, the suffering, different positions of different people in the material world, all this is because of the combinations of matter and jivas. And the result of that. So the Lord, of course, brings them together, but the final result, the suffering and the karma, etc., is because of the jivas, not because of the Supreme Lord. So therefore, to explain the faults in the creation, or what we call faults, is actually the faults in the jiva. He is the one, because matter itself can't do anything, it's inert. So if anything happens in the material world, we have to blame the jivas for it. So therefore, when we see the faults in the material world, we should not blame the Supreme Lord, but we attribute that to the jivas in the material world when they interact with material energy and other jivas. In this way, the Lord remains separate from the creation and not responsible for the bad effects of it. At the same time, because He is the Supreme Lord, He is the one that makes this arrangement. So therefore, though we do see faults in the material world, we also see good things in the material world. And ultimately, the Lord has a certain plan that operates in the material world. Through that plan, the jivas get benefit. So we have an arrangement in the material world by which the Lord elevates the jivas and makes arrangements for them to get out of the material world and have eternal happiness. So that's a good aspect of the material world. This is because of the Lord's arrangement. In this way, we don't attribute any fault of the Supreme Lord, and at the same time, why He would create the material world with the jivas and matter, etc., because there's a plan behind it to help the jivas. So therefore, not a fault in the creation of the material world. So in any case, there's a separation of the Lord from the material world. He is not responsible for all the activities that happen here. The jivas have some minute independence, and it's because of that that we get problems in the material world. The Lord is separate from that. The gunas affect the jivas, but they do not affect the Supreme Lord. The Lord, by His nature, of course, is all-powerful, and He has all knowledge. And with that knowledge, He creates the material world. We don't expect Him to become subject to the ignorance of the material world, though He has created it. The one who is the origin of knowledge should not be subject to ignorance that is created within the material world. This, of course, is a statement to also refute the idea that the jivas are actually Brahman, but covered by ignorance. And that by doing jnana, then you get liberated, and again, you become Brahman. So no possibility that Supreme Brahman can be subject to ignorance like that. So this is a defeat of the, say, the Mayavada philosophy, which talks about parts of Brahman becoming subjected to ignorance, becoming jivas, and then living in the material world in illusion. They get rid of the ignorance and illusion, then again they become Brahman. So here it says rather the opposite. The Lord is the source of all knowledge eternally. He's never affected by any ignorance at all. Of course, he can also not be divided up into jivas, etc., and parts become subject to ignorance, etc. So he's always in his supreme position of knowledge, in his supreme position of power. And therefore, because he is all knowledgeable and all powerful, he makes perfect arrangements in the material world. And we cannot criticize those arrangements. Of course, because this material world is made up of these two energies, the Bahiranga Shakti and the Tatastha Shakti, there is some feelings of imperfection. You get Tamagun, Rajagun, Sattvagun, suffering, karma, etc. So the alternative is take shelter of the Antaranga Shakti, internal energy of the Lord. There is no suffering, no imperfection, no birth and death. And all, the opposite, complete bliss, increasing bliss at all times. So the Supreme Lord makes arrangement by which the jivas can reject the shelter of the Bahiranga Shakti and accept the shelter of the Antaranga Shakti and get supreme bliss. So it's beneficial. He makes arrangements which are beneficial for the jiva. So the process that does that is process of bhakti yoga. This is the process of taking the jiva away from material energy and putting him under the spiritual energy. Bhakti itself, of course, is Antaranga Shakti of the Lord. Prema is Antaranga Shakti of the Lord, Ladini Shakti. So if the Lord comes under the Antaranga Shakti, the jiva comes under the Antaranga Shakti, then he is full of bliss. But he's still a jiva in relation to the Supreme Lord. So, Akura here is glorifying the position of the Lord. He is Supreme Lord because he actually creates, maintains, destroys everything, and he is not subject to the faults of the material world. He's completely separated from it all time, not affected by anything. Full of all power, full of all knowledge. So it's a very simple statement, but something that we have to accept if we're to accept the position of the Supreme Lord.
Well, as we see, you explained that this the material nature, prakriti, is unconscious, correct? So, but the jiva shakti is conscious. Then now question might come that how can unconscious overpower conscious?
So the reason that the unconscious can overpower the unconscious, it doesn't really overpower it in one sense, but the jiva, by his very nature, can be subject to ignorance. That's the Tatastha Shakti. He can be subject to ignorance. Lord cannot be subject to ignorance, so he's not called Tatastha Shakti. A jiva can be subject to ignorance, therefore he's called Tatastha. He doesn't have to be, but he can be. So he's a borderline energy. He's conscious, but can be subject to... So it's why he can be subject to ignorance and material energy is because he's not the Supreme Lord. The definition of the jiva is such that he is dependent and liable to ignorance. That's the definition of jiva. It's the very nature of jiva. So therefore, he can fall into ignorance, think he's a material body, take up a material body, get subject to karma and desires, etc. So is the nature of jiva. So conscious particle, but subject to ignorance.
Krishna Maharaj, see, in the spiritual world, especially Golaka Vrindavan, Krishna display his sweetness. Krishna display his sweetness in the Goloka Vrindavan. But in the material world, normally, no, we don't see his sweetness aspect. We don't see that much, especially with the jiva. But can you say that because he doesn't directly relate with the material world, that's why we cannot experience the sweetness of Krishna in the material world? Normally, in the material world, normally creation maintains destruction done by his energy. You can say, that's why you cannot see in the material world. This is sweetness.
We get the reflection of sweetness in affectionate relationships in the material world. That's the extent you get sweetness in the material world. But it's this material rasa. So material rasa gives rise to a type of sweetness. But it's temporary, subject to fault, it's always ends in disaster, etc. So this is what we call material rasa. So they have madhurya rasa in the material world, sakya rasa and vatsalya rasa and whatever. And they also have the other ones, fear rasa and anger rasa, etc. And in the material world, these become even more prominent than the primary, what we call the primary rasas. So there's no division of primary and secondary in the material world, only in spiritual world. But those rasas, the primary rasas, are the ones that give affection. And that gives rise to some sort of feeling of sweetness or whatever we find in the material world.
Although you might say that, you know, this is little bit sweetness we experience in the material world, but actually, in reality, we see actually it's not a sweetness. It's not actually sweetness, at the end, suffering only.
Yeah, under illusion. It's material rasa.
Yeah, under illusion, huh?
Yeah. So the only way we can get actual sweetness is establish a relationship with Supreme Lord, who is perfect object of love.
Pure devotee, or rather say, Nitya Siddhanta Krishna
Maharaj.
The difference, if any, of knowledge of a Nitya Siddha devotee and Krishna, the knowledge difference.
Well, yes, a Nitya Siddha devotee or even a Sadhana Siddha devotee is not subject to ignorance anymore. And it's described that because of the endowment of the Chit Shakti of the Lord in the form of bhakti, obviously, which is Ladini and Samvit Shaktis, it becomes solidified with the jiva in prema. So it becomes eternally part of the jiva at that point. So he has the Samvit Shakti, which is the knowledge Shakti within him. But it's different from the Supreme Lord because it's only a portion of his Shakti, a small portion. All the different jivas in the spiritual world will have a portion of that Shakti. But the origin of that is Supreme Lord himself, who has Ladini, Samvit, and Sandini Shaktis in him, Sarup Shakti. So, similar to the Lord, and therefore not subject to ignorance of the material world, etc. But, again, the jiva always remains jiva. So he's subservient to the Supreme Lord. He never surpasses that position. The Lord, with his other shaktis, like yoga maya shakti or whatever, he can limit the spiritual perception of the jiva in the spiritual world for pastimes. The jiva himself can't do that by himself. It's the will of the Lord that all this takes place. So that's the difference between the full knowledge of the jiva in the spiritual world and that of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is in control, so he can limit that spiritual perception one way or the other. So we can say in the spiritual world, this is a type of ignorance, but it is there for a purpose of pastimes. Yeah, spiritual ignorance.
Well, you've been saying that many times that this siddhas, now this sadhana siddha is always there in material world, anadi. My question is that how come nitya siddha be there? Why is that that differentiation that nitya siddhas and sadhana siddhas? Jiva is always in material world. How they can be nitya siddhas?
Well, of course, you can always say, well, if you ask that question, then I have to assume that everybody started out in ignorance, and then some of them at one point in time went to the spiritual world. But then that implies that at one point the Lord was all sitting there by himself and there's now nobody there. Vaikuntha was empty, Goloka was empty. But that also is not possible. So the Lord is always with his devotees. So therefore those are the Nityasiddha devotees. He's always with his devotees in bliss in the spiritual world. He is full of Ananda. The Ananda is also eternal. So therefore there must always be devotees in that spiritual world to
why is that,
assist his Ananda.
The partiality like that. Why they are there and why?
It's not partiality. It's just that there's different types of jivas. Some jivas are in that position of always being with the Lord. Some don't like the Lord. It's just their nature. But the Lord has an arrangement by which their nature of not liking the Lord can change. And that's why we have different processes in the material world, karma yoga, gyan yoga, bhakti yoga, to help them change their attitude.
So Maharaj, there is a different degree of knowledge of even Nityasiddhas or pure devotees. For the sake of pastimes, they are limited in certain aspects for the sake of pastimes. Good.